Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of ID the Future. This is Logan Gage for the Center for Science and Culture out in Washington, D.C. And today I have joining me a special guest, Dr. Benjamin Weicker, who's a senior fellow of Discovery Institute. And in the last couple of years, Dr. Weicker has written up a storm with books including 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, and I believe the subtitle is 5 Books That Did Not Help, Answering the New Atheism, A Meaningful World with our colleague Jonathan Witt, and now a new biography of Charles Darwin, delightfully titled The Darwin Myth, The Life and Lies of Charles Darwin. Thanks so much for being on the show, Dr. Weicker.
Wonderful to be here.
Great, great. Well, I was just hoping you could tell us, first of all, how you came to write this biography of Charles Darwin.
Well, one thing that spurred me on was that this year, 2009, is the big Darwin year, the year of Darwin. You have sort of the accidental collusion of two dates, his 200th anniversary of his birth and the 150th anniversary of the publication of The Origin of Species. Now, why do we need another Darwin biography? There didn't seem to be a good critical biography out there. There are some good biographies. You know, Janet Brown did a 2-volume, big, thick one, and Desmond and Moore have done a good job on theirs. However, neither of those are as critical of Darwin as they should be. And by that, I don't mean painting Darwin as some kind of nasty person, because he wasn't, but taking a good, clear, critical view of his life rather than a sort of bending things, sort of secular saint worship approach.
Right. Speaking of which, in popular thought, you know, we often hear that Darwin published the Origin of Species, and then the only thing we know after that is that he faced some religious hostility, religious criticism. Is that the case that you found in your research, or have you found that there were also scientific critiques at the time, starting the 19th century?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I called it the Darwin myth, because there are so many myths about Darwin, and one of the ones is that there were no accounts of evolution prior to the Origin of Species. No one had ever heard of it. It wasn't even a scientific thought out there on it, and everyone was happily going around believing in a 6,000-year-old Earth and had never discovered dinosaur bones. Darwin writes his book, poof, everyone of good common sense, everyone who's rational immediately accepted evolution, dropped the religion,
right.
and forever after, we have set up the great warfare of science, rational science, spearheaded by evolution, and irrational faith, spearheaded by, you know, knuckleheads and, you know, know-nothings.
Right.
That is a myth.
Yeah, so
that
so,
is a myth.
So what is the case?
Yeah. It's a horrible myth because it's so persistent. And that's one of the other reasons I wanted to go back and look at Darwin's life, because you find out that the situation is far more complex. And I'm going to jump ahead in his life to the time when he publishes The Origin of Species. And the interesting thing about that is it's his own friends, those who are helping him push his theory, who have the most trenchant disagreements with him about his theory. And the one thing they disagree about is this: Darwin's account of evolution is not sufficient to explain the evolution of human morality and intelligence. Now, I'm not talking about people who are, sort of some kind of fundamentalist Christians opposing him. You're talking about his cohorts like the Harvard botanist Asa Gray, who was a theist as well. Charles Lyell, has in many ways Darwin's mentor, thought, okay, you know, Darwin, your account of natural selection is wonderful, but it's not wonderful enough. It's not big enough to explain how human beings got here. His own co-discoverer of evolution, Alfred Russel Wallace, disagreed on this essential point. Darwin was furious with him. But Wallace said, you know, Darwin, you just don't understand human evolution, because you put it forth in a reductionist way, and you can't take account of all kinds of things in this kind of reductionist approach. Mm-hmm. And St. George Mivart, who was an evolutionist who actually studied under Huxley and was Darwin's greatest critic, took Darwin to task on all these points, and it just decimated Darwin. You know, he had to go back in his Origin of Species and sort of plug the holes that Mivart shot in the side of the argument. Mivart didn't have a problem with evolution. He had a problem with Darwin's godless account of evolution.
Right.
So this is the thing. The main, if I could do this with this book, I would sweep away this myth that evolution has to be godless to be scientific. Hmm. That's the main myth. And if we can go back historically, we pick up all those who said it ain't so. You know, and I focus especially on those around Darwin who were considered his allies for making these most trenchant criticisms of Darwin.
Right. Now you mentioned earlier, and I guess I skipped around in the chronology, but what about Darwin's earlier life? I mean, have you found out things that surprised you about his earlier life? And related to that is how reliable is his own count of himself in his autobiography?
Well, here's where I'm putting on my flak jacket because people are going to shoot me. But at points in the autobiography, you have to say, Darwin, you're not just stretching the truth. That's getting into the lie territory.
Give us an example of that.
Well, one of the ones is, Darwin was going into the Anglican priesthood, not out of any great devotion, but because he was basically a washout in Edinburgh at medical school, and his father, who was an atheist, wanted to send him to Cambridge, to study for the Anglican priesthood, not out of any religious faith. But simply because that's where you put sort of the lovable losers, you let them have a country parish, even though they didn't believe. Well, Darwin, at this point in his autobiography, says, well, I read some theology to see if I was really fit for this, and at this point, I really did believe literally and truly in every word of Scripture. Hmm. And here's where the red flag goes. Darwin came from a three-generation religious skeptic tradition. His father, or his grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, also an evolutionist, by the way, was a perfect Enlightenment skeptic. Just exactly what you would find in the salons. He was internationally famous as an Enlightenment skeptic, and he set the intellectual ambience for the Darwin family line. Darwin's own father, Robert Darwin's almost certainly an atheist. I think Erasmus Darwin was an atheist too, but Robert Darwin almost certainly was. No part of Darwin's background for at least two generations, going back into the late 1700s, well before he was born, had anything to do with any affirmation of Scripture at all. The best of them were Unitarians, which means they believed that Scripture could not be taken literally at all, and that Jesus Christ was only a moral teacher. Now, that was the most fervent ones. Some of the women folk took on a pale form of Anglicanism. In fact, his own wife, Emma Darwin, Charles Darwin's wife, was probably the most avid Christian believer of them all. But that was a kind of accident because her father, Josiah Wedgwood, who was also an agnostic at best, even though they hadn't coined a term at time, but he was a religious skeptic, sent her off to be, schooled by the Anglicans, and, oddly enough, she picked up the doctrine as if it were true. But that was out of that was in contrast to what the rest of the Darwin Wedgwood clan believed. So it's highly unlikely that Darwin had anything but the same kind of religious skepticism that was just part of the Darwin clan. And the notion that he was a good Bible believer, I think, is just to be ruled out of court.
Hmm. Now, the view today, I think, is pretty widespread that, because I want to touch on this point about atheism, not so much about Darwin himself, but what about the theory? Where does it intersect with atheism, if at all? And because the view today is pretty widespread that Darwin was doing pure science, and his views are here and there later on twisted for others by evil ends. And I'm wondering if that is your view also, or you know, are atheists abusing Darwin's theory when they say Darwinism supports their atheist belief?
Well, it gets complicated because historically, the theory of evolution goes back to ancient Greece, about three centuries before the birth of Christ, to Epicurus, who did set forth a theory of evolution that really sounds amazingly Darwinian, and for a reason, and that
which
was picked
which
up
touched on in your book, Moral Darwinism.
Yeah, absolutely, and became even more widespread through a disciple of his, the Roman philosopher Lucretius, who wrote his great Epicurean evolutionist poem about 50 years before the birth of Christ, and that found its way into European culture. And in fact, Darwin's own grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, was pretty much like a modern reincarnation of the ancient Roman Epicurean philosopher Lucretius, writing these, you know, the turgid poetry that had an evolutionary intent. So that was part of the European intellectual tradition before it ever had any kind of grounding in science. Evolution, it wasn't called evolution yet, but we'll just call it evolution, was firmly entrenched among the radicals at least 150 years before Darwin was born. And it was in his own family in that atheistic form, you know, two generations before Darwin was born. Now, in Europe, in the beginning of the first half of the 1800s, there were many people, competent scientists, who saw the progressive nature of the fossil record and understood it to be stretching back millions of years as a sign that there was a kind of directed development as the Earth itself developed, really a kind of anthropic account of how life came about. You know, it's amazingly anthropic, you know, so that the stages of animal development follow the stages of the geological development and the conditions of the Earth. So you have a kind of privileged planet argument. I want to say that because I think that's exactly true. And Darwin's own mentor, Adam Sedgwick, had in geology had something of this view. Now, at the time of the Darwin sets forth the Origin of Species in mid-1800s, there were many other evolutionary accounts out there. Some of them were atheistic, some of them were theistic. But what's, again, most important is that people like, Asa Gray, Charles Lyell, Alfred Russel Wallace, and St. George Mivart were setting forth well-argued theistic accounts of evolution, which saw Darwin's account of natural selection as woefully inadequate, as creating all kinds of problems, and scientifically flawed. So it opens up a new vista for us. We can say, wait a second, this isn't evolution, you know, it's got to be scientific atheism versus foolish religion. It isn't that way at all. In fact, that's the Darwin myth. It's a distortion of the history of science, but it's one that we're still suffering under.
Right. And where does social Darwinism fit into this? Because we usually hear that Darwin was doing science, but then some people came along in the decades following that in the late 19th century and sort of perverted his teaching on biology and by applying it to all these other areas. What's your take on social Darwinism?
Yeah, that's an important point because obviously social Darwinism, which leads right into the eugenic movements and the notion that the poor should be crushed and the unfit should be cast out and eliminated, and it doesn't just lead to Hitler, it leads to all kinds of other things. Well, of course, people who affirm Darwin want to distance themselves today from that, and so the false notion developed that Darwin just set forth a theory of biology and social Darwinism is an aberration. Well, this is an awful lie. I want to say myth, but it's so bad it's a lie. And all you need to do to see that it's a lie is you go back and read Charles Darwin's own Descent of Man. And in the Darwin myth, I show how early Darwin came to the notions that he brought about in the Descent of Man. And in the Descent of Man, you read the most horrifying passages that are obviously eugenic. I mean, Darwin is the founder of modern eugenics, no matter what anyone else says, because he saw that the evolution of human beings must act in accordance with the evolution of everything else. On his terms, that is, by the elimination of the unfit, by war between the closely allied species. And Darwin set forth unflinching accounts of that in human evolution, where the destruction of one tribe by another tribe, one race by another race, was just the way it worked. It's the way it worked in the past. It's the way it works in the future. So one thing that I make very clear in the Darwin myth is that notion that you can distinguish Darwinism from social Darwinism is simply false.
Hmm. And so what do you make of these recent treatments of Darwin in this this year of celebrating Darwin? I'm thinking of the Desmond and Moore book on basically saying Darwin was an abolitionist and motivated by his abolitionist sentiments, and there was another book comparing Darwin to Lincoln, and I'm wondering whether you think these are accurate portrayals or not of Darwin.
Well, in one sense they are. In another sense, they're just desperate attempts to erase bad odors from Darwin's own life. Here is the proper way to understand it. Darwin himself was indeed an adamant abolitionist, and in fact, he's a third-generation abolitionist at least. His own grandfather, Erasmus Darwin, was allied himself with Wilberforce against the slave trade. And so you have in Darwin's own family line long-standing horror at slavery. So that's true. That's true. On the other hand, Darwin's own theory affirms slavery as natural. And in fact, William Wilberforce's son, the great Reverend Wilberforce that everyone makes fun of and debate about with Huxley, warned Darwin explicitly that when you argue the way that you argue, human slavery is just as natural as the slavery that occurs among ants, where large red ants enslave smaller black ants to do their bidding. You can't get around that. And Desmond and Moore try to get around that by emphasizing, you know, all the passages where, you know, florid passages where Darwin strikes out against slavery, and then sort of underplay all the passages where he talks about the inferiority of certain races, and they're almost always the races who end up being slaves, especially in that, you know, the 19th century, 17th, 18th, 19th century. They're just right there in Darwin. You can't get around it. And Darwin even talks about the extinction of these races in the future, which is a horrifying thought, but he said it straight out. So this is certain in Darwin, that his own account of natural selection as determining how human beings evolved completely undermines his really fine moral sentiment against slavery. There's no way to reconcile it. It's a contradiction inherent in Darwinism. It's the same one, or it says the same source, as his the contradiction between his humanitarian ideas and the eugenic implications of his own theory, which he himself drew out. It's just a contradiction.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Weicker, for joining us today. I think you've whetted the appetite of our listeners, and the book, The Darwin Myth, The Life and Lies of Charles Darwin, is available now. You can find it on Amazon and other places. This is Logan Gage for the Center for Science and Culture. Thanking you for joining us today on ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.